Stacy, they had truly good intentions in the very beginning. They wanted this island to be a place of positive change, of great benefit to the people who were sent there. Those people would be poor. And you share in the book that they were not just poor, but there were other descriptive terms and tended to be immigrants, as you shared with me and others. Share with us more about the population there and some of those specific horror stories, nightmares that they had to live through.
Yeah, I like to make the point that this is not just a New York story, because the population on Blackwell's Island were mostly immigrants. And during the time period that I was writing about, it was Irish was the greatest percentage of the population, followed by German immigrants. So if you have an ancestor that came to the United States through New York, and if they came here financially struggling, as most immigrants do, then chances are they spent some time on Blackwell's Island. But one of the things I learned about in my research, starting with the lunatic asylum, but this is true in all the institutions, was the fact that there was no plumbing. So if they someone wanted to take a bath, water had to be brought over in pails. And so there was like protocols that everyone was supposed to follow. And when everyone was brought to, for instance, the lunatic asylum first, they were supposed to be interviewed by a doctor and nurse to oversee their physical health and to learn more about their mental health and why they were there. Then they were supposed to be given a bath, nice, fresh, clean, warm clothes, and then put into a nice room. And that's how it was supposed to go. But in reality, they would get there, and they might be interviewed by a med school student with no experience. So that person, generally a man, in fact, always a man until the later 19th century, had no experience to inform his questions. But the most horrifying part was that carrying water over in pails just was too arduous. So the commissioners decided, we're not going to do it. We're going to fill up a few bathtubs in the beginning of the day, and then everyone's just going to bathe in the same baths. So a woman might come who's suffering from some, terrible affliction, and she has to get into a bathtub that maybe 30 women have been bathed in before. And those 30 women could be diseased. They could have been playing with their feces. They could have not bathed for weeks and have been filled with lice. So by the time this woman steps into the water, it's more sludge than water and filled with things that are moving. And here she is, like, at the most terrified, vulnerable part of her life, and she has to step into that. And if she doesn't, she's going to have convicts forcing her down into that water. I mean, hardly the sanctuary and healing experience that the original planners had envisioned.
Were the commissioners who the people who originally designed this and planned this utopia aware of the nightmare that these people had to live through?
They were so aware, and this is what just really infuriated me. The wardens would complain about, like, going back to this bath situation, they would complain about it and year after year after year. But once they got a little experience, they would see how realistically they didn't have much choice, because they weren't given the budgets to have more employees to arrange for more cleaner baths for the inmates. And so they would complain, like, we need more money, we need more employees, we need this, that, and the other thing. And they really felt bad for the inmates. But there would be various investigative journalists who would do exposés about what was going on in the lunatic asylum, and they would pretend not to know about this, even though I would have it in their annual reports, the wardens discussing the problem. So they were lying when they said they didn't know about it. There was one of the main characters, I call it a character, but it's a real person, was this in my book, was this Episcopal missionary to the island, Reverend William Glennie French. And in the 1870s, things got so bad. Like, there were murders in the lunatic asylum. In 1879, this one pregnant inmate was put in a straitjacket and thrown into solitary, and they just left her there. And so she gave birth in solitary with no one around in a straitjacket. And word about this got out, so the Senate conducted an investigation, and they called William Glennie French. They subpoenaed him to testify, and he wanted to testify, but his superior said that if he did, he would lose his position. So they subpoenaed his superior and asked him to explain why on earth would a man of God lose his position if he stood up here to explain how these people were being abused. Isn't this the Christian thing to do? And at first I thought this guy, that his superior, was like a bad guy. And then I realized, like, he was in a no-win position. Their presence on the island was granted at the whim of these commissioners. They had to get a pass from them in order to go to the island and provide spiritual support. And these commissioners could revoke those passes at any time. So he was thinking, yes, like, we want to help them, but we can't help them if we're not there. So he really had just no good alternatives.
Yeah, he was facing a dilemma. And you mentioned that earlier, you were saying that there were problems, there were money problems. It cost so much more than any of them had ever anticipated. So once they began to get a feel for just how expensive it would be to run that institution, was it a matter of the money just not being available, or was it that they just didn't have the cooperation that they needed in obtaining that money so that they could better fund the institution, the island?
Well, it's a question you can ask our government today, like why some programs are not properly funded and some get more. And any program that is targeting lower-income families have the most modest budgets, and that was true then, and it's true now. The wardens would ask for more money, but that would involve either raising taxes or taking money away from other programs, and that just never happened.
Stacy's book is entitled Damnation Island. We're going to mention this again at the end of the conversation, Stacy, but could you also share with people at this point how they can get their hands on your book?
Well, hopefully any bookstore that you walk into, but it's also available online at any online retailer that you use, whether it's independent booksellers, Amazon, places like that.
So everyone, we are going to mention this again towards the end of the conversation, but just in case we have anyone who may not be able to be with us at the end, I definitely wanted you to get that information now. Stay with us. Our guest, yours and mine, Ms. Stacy Horn, and I will be right back.